and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio on WTCM News Talk 580, starring the one, the only, the dapper Mr. Dennis Prout of Prout Financial Design. Good morning and welcome back, sir.
Good morning. Good morning, Ron. It's great to be here. Thank you. On a Thursday morning, 12-2 of 21. Here we go in December, eh?
Here we go.
Yes, sir.
Buckle up.
Yeah. And I'm sure everyone here has their Christmas shopping all done, right, guys? Three men in the studio, silence.
Right. Of course.
No, don't look at me.
Yeah. We all look over at Colleen. Yeah, right. Well, it's a pleasure to be here. So we have lots to talk about in today's show. This morning, we're going to talk about estate and income planning, the very material that we talked about in the CMU class. Shay's idea as we grappled with what we were going to discuss here on Monday. Finally came up with this. It's great info, and I think you'll find it helpful in your overall planning tactics. Now, wanted to make an announcement, too. On the 23rd of December, we're going to do a pre-record for the show, a traditional story that we've done in previous years, plus a few other things. And I have not yet... I got to get with Steve about that. Yes, we need to take care of that detail. To hopefully get that recorded
a few weeks.
That day. Yep, you bet. So that'll be going on the 23rd, as well as if that's 23rd is that Thursday, that would mean it'll be spot on for Saturday for Christmas
right.
as well. That rebroadcast. So
well, that's good because it'll be a Christmas theme, obviously.
You bet. It sure will be. So. We're talking today about how assets transfer at death and also income planning, the very material we discussed on the CMU for the CMU-sponsored program of continuing ed. And it had been their more popular program, which we did with them, and how assets transfer on death, which we have discussed before. Number one, contract assets, IRAs, retirement plans, life insurance policies. Many folks overlook those. Oh, yeah, that old one that my parents bought for me when I was 5 years old, that sort of thing. You'd be amazed how those assets tend to be forgotten and or, given how busy we all are, we don't get those updated. I had a conversation with a couple of weeks ago, and they were talking about a retirement plan through his work. Well, he had been at work since before he was married. And the beneficiaries were all very out of date. Mm. His wife, whom he'd been married to for 5-7 years, somewhere in there, was not listed anywhere on that account. And so if something were to happen to him, of course, he wanted to get that fixed and changed. Because ERISA law actually requires his wife to be primary beneficiary, and there would be problems if it were
the law requires otherwise. A spouse to make their spouse a beneficiary.
Correct.
Wow.
Unless that spouse has given authorization to that retirement plan after the date of marriage that she is or he is willing to not be primary beneficiary. So there's a special form for most plans to allow that, but that's something that spouse has to authorize as a spouse.
So if, well, maybe in this case that you're talking about, so if a guy has his brother and sister as the beneficiaries from long ago, then he gets married to his spouse, never changes the beneficiaries, and he passes away, does the law give it to the spouse automatically?
It's not automatic. She'll have to fight it, but she'll win. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's happened. That's been actually a part of the Ed Slott classroom teaching that we've had. In a specific instance, two children were named as primary beneficiary, and the current spouse had given authorization before she was a spouse.
Ah.
Well, it didn't fly, and she fought it. After having been a spouse, she was able to say, I changed my mind, and under ERISA law, I'm due that those funds. And so those children were out.
O-U-T.
O-U-T. Wow. So some of those things that you think are perhaps a slam dunk. Well, can life really be that complicated? Mm-hmm. Yes, it can be. And why should you care? Well, because hopefully you're creating problems for your children. What exactly do I mean by that? Because you're continuing to save and you have various accounts that may not transfer quite as simply as you thought. Some of that may be a challenge.
A challenge.
Indeed. My French accent here, I can't help it, you know. So
back to that law, the that pertains to the spouse gets the benefits. You said IRA, life insurance as examples, 401k too?
Yes.
Any kind of savings, retirement savings plan or life insurance?
Or individual stocks.
Or stocks.
So stock you've owned forever? It's in my name, you know, I bought it a few years back. Well, if you pass away, she's got to have that probated to ensure that she actually gets it, if it's a she in this particular instance, okay?
Yeah.
And it, typically, generally, she'd be named as a joint tenant and or within the trust, and then also a transfer on death form with that, too. So if you both pass away, then it goes to the children, generally, again, and or through a trust. So how are these assets transferring? And especially that boat you may own that's at a distance. Well, I just put it my name as the easy thing to do through the Secretary of State. Well, that could be a problem as well. If you get sick, she, in this case, let's say he bought it, wants to make certain that her name is on that, as well as perhaps property outside of the state. Florida, that is a common theme these days, and or Arizona. Is that property in your names? So that you are not subject to probate. Because a probate outside of the state is much more onerous than within. Much more complicated. This kind of stuff does not get solved overnight. And it is not a happy subject. I mean, obviously, any of us wanting to think about death, it's, you know, we do have clients that have pre-planned their funerals, but it's about 2% of our clients. So it's relatively few and far between.
When you say probate, that just sounds like a word. But the process is you have to probably get an attorney.
Yes.
And then you go before a probate judge, and you have to make a case, and maybe you're fighting against a family member or something. You have to make a case as to why the item or accounts in question should go to you.
If it's a significant asset.
Yeah.
Yeah. So $100,000 in 401k, $100,000 in J.P. Morgan stock or whatever it is. All of a sudden, you see the complexity that causes. We have a simple change in registration on that account can make a huge difference.
So your advice today at the end of the year as people review their accounts is what?
Really check the registration. How do I own this? You know, for those times when you actually can sit back and say, okay, what are my primary beneficiaries and have I named contingent? Those phone calls that I get at the office, that's why every client that comes in, we show them what their primary and contingent beneficiaries are, because those phone calls are not any fun if the primary and or contingent beneficiaries are not named. It is so much easier to settle these estates if primary's been named. And in this case, if he or she wants the children to receive one of those accounts and or even a portion of those accounts, if they've named contingent, all of a sudden they can have or allow that asset to bypass. What could that mean? Let's say, for instance, you've got four $100,000 accounts, all of them in IRAs, and you've saved, you know, wherever they may be. They could be in Fidelity, Schwab, wherever. It doesn't matter. On one of those accounts, you've got two sons from a previous marriage, and you'd like them to get that account. Well, if you have named them as contingent, theoretically you could say, I'm going to disclaim this account and have that go to those two sons because I'd love them to pay the tax and also receive the money.
But doesn't the law say that it goes to the spouse?
It does, unless he or she disclaims it.
Okay, you've got
an official disclaimer.
The spouse.
The surviving spouse. He or she could disclaim that asset. That's the power of not only naming the primary or, I'll just call it a primary and or second and contingent or contingent beneficiary. So the planning options that you have, not only for yourself, but as well as the children, can be significant. I'm not sure I want to do that at that point. The beauty is you can make that decision and you have some real time to make it. You've got, in many cases, up to 9 months to a year to actually disclaim that asset. And we've seen that happen in difficult situations, but where the spouse had said, you know, this makes a lot of sense for me to disclaim this in this particular situation. And we've told that story. But the key is flexibility, because obviously it can get more complex. Well, what if I don't want to disclaim it? You don't have to. You simply then take ownership of that account as the primary beneficiary. Now, if you are under the age of 59 and a half, and let's say he in this situation was not, you can leave it in his name and then take distributions without having to pay the extra 10% penalty tax. So all of a sudden there are wrinkles that can go along with this, and it's important that you've named the beneficiary, but also that you sit with a good financial advisor or counselor in regards to how to best handle this. Because again, it's amazing what you can do in terms of tax saving as well as transference of these accounts.
If somebody's not aware of all this, though, and they have the four $100,000 accounts in your example,
yes,
in their name, say the male in the marriage, the father,
okay, slash, sure,
and he goes, well, you know, I'll leave two of those to the wife, and I'll leave one to my son and one to my daughter. But upon his death, that goes to the wife automatically, unless she was aware, they were aware and agreed on the plan.
No.
Right?
That's incorrect.
That's incorrect.
I loved it that you made that example there, Ron. So that would be the case for a 401k, but not in IRA land.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Not as an IRA. Okay? So obviously, you know, you want to your spouse to be aware of these things as you're planning them, but the IRA does not have the same requirements. That may be one reason you want to be able to disclaim these sorts of assets and simplify the estate planning therefrom. And or let's say you've named as contingent a charitable beneficiary, let's say a 10% beneficiary. In many cases, the surviving spouse could disclaim that 10% portion. Or let's say, in this case, it's a $20,000 IRA that he or she, as primary beneficiary, wants to see it go direct now to the charity. She or she has made that decision that it's okay to pass it on. Disclaim it. It goes direct to the charity. Never taxed. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. How often in your practice with your clients do you see, in passing on assets upon death, that some of it or all of it goes to a charity? And the required minimum distribution when people don't need that they make the charitable contribution. The reason I ask is, are charities benefiting from that in a pretty big way?
Somewhat. It's now just starting to happen. Hmm. I think because we're talking about it on WTCM radio.
Could be.
I know. Sometimes it does make a difference. And it allows you to think, you know, what is it that we'd really like? Who would we like to help? So if that money that you never paid tax on as you put it in, thank you very much, and that you never paid tax on as it grew, you pass from this life into the next, and you want to give whatever amount to your church or St. Jude's Children's Hospital or whatever and never have that stuff taxed, We're getting more and more clients naming the contingent in some cases and or primary beneficiaries, as you mentioned, a percentage to that charity,
mm-hmm.
because then that money is never taxed. And that is, in, from an efficiency standpoint, that's better than giving appreciated stock. You heard it here first.
You know what will be interesting is we were talking about futurists today.
Sure.
One trend that's been happening for a while is the birth rate's down. So as you see...
Not in our family.
No, well... right. Yeah, well, you're making up for some others then.
Those children.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But as you see more people, if they age without children, and when it's time to pass this stuff on or whatever, they may be choosing more charities as opposed to... family.
We did personally, and we've told the children about it, and we remind about them periodically that, yes, significant amounts of our tax-deferred accounts are scheduled currently to go to charity as contingent beneficiaries. There are three or four named there, charities, so you can really expand that. Mm. You can always change it as much as you want while you're alive, and that's the point. Well, you know, what if I name two of them and I want to add a third? Obviously, as long as you're alive, you can change any of those. And that's a key thing about that. And that's the power in having thought through that. Well, even if you're uncertain, consider naming a portion, which you can do under most plans. Make certain that the document with that custodial, that the custodial company will comply with that, that they'll actually do that. But in terms of giving assets, the house, the real estate, appreciated stocks are much better assets and life insurance to give to children than those retirement accounts that are infested with tax. Now, the Roth IRA, not so much. The Roth IRA accounts, much better to give to children and or even grandkids.
There's no tax on that.
Because that money is never taxed. Now, they do have to draw that out in a 10-year time frame. But again, that because that money is never taxed, there's real power in having given it to direct to children or grandkids. Maybe it's part of an education plan that you want to do for them. So you see the power in just having thought through this.
Yeah, and we talk about it takes a lot of effort to plan your retirement, and if you get someone good like Dennis that you can talk to, but once you're retired, you have an asset there, and obviously you're going to rely on that for your well-being, but also you plan what can be done with it beyond. There's a lot of options there.
What if we don't use it all?
Right.
You know, that's the thing, the beautiful thing.
You send grandkids to college or...
out there, absolutely.
Whatever.
Having done the Roth conversions and make the pain of paying the tax, where's the best place to leave those funds? It could be children. Again, it could be grandkids. So, and maybe it's a trust as well. That directs those assets to be given for the children's education. All kinds of things you can do that. And let's take a break, shall we?
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio on WTCM with Prout Financial Design. Mr. Dennis Prout is in today solo. Heidi and Shay are AWOL.
You bet. This Omicron variant, if you will, is appearing to not be as serious as we were discussing beforehand. Some of the news media are indicating.
Yeah.
When you have a variant that has this many mutations in it as this one does, there is some suggestion that from the literature that it becomes less contagious. On the whole, this may be a less contagious variant because it's acquired so many mutations. And that's what we've seen in certain cases in the past. This is from Dr. Scott Gottlieb. And this is from the GaveCall research group. Now, what's interesting about that as well, there are other comments here made by Goldman Sachs. Pfizer and Moderna say that they can make changes to their current mRNA vaccines to ensure that they are effective against the NU variant, which they're also referring to as the, I'm pretty sure this is the Omicron, yeah. Mm. They further say that they can adapt their vaccines within 60 days and ship the first batches in 100 days. Moderna says that they can begin human testing on an adapted vaccine in 60 days, but noted that the timeline after that is subject to regulatory processes. So we're starting to get some info that would make it appear, and even as you mentioned from South Africa too, from those who experienced it directly that it didn't seem to be as causes negative side effects.
The initial reports, mild conditions, which then you ask the question, do you really need a vaccine if it turns out that as it spreads, the symptoms are mild for all or most people?
It's interesting. The interruptives have gotten a lot better compared to a year ago. All these different, well, they're calling them the cocktails, if you will. Yeah. Now, I'm not advocating for or against a vaccine by any means at all, because I got the Pfizer vaccine, and Jill's been vaccinated as well, just for full disclosure. But obviously, they've helped disrupt a lot of the side effects after the fact for many of these cases. Everyone's health is different, of course.
It is, so yeah. Must do everybody's right immune system is different.
Absolute. I know I'm taking a lot more C and D vitamins as
yes.
a result of this, too.
I had when I got sick last September. Anyway, the first September we had COVID. I thought, oh, boy, do I have COVID? You know, I had the symptoms. And I did not. I got a test. I was negative. But I read a lot about the vitamins.
And yes.
Since then, I've taken the D or C or magnesium
vitamin
and
D.
Zinc.
Oh, mag and zinc too.
And
yeah.
I don't, you know, I can't have no proof that to attribute that to it, but I haven't gotten anything since then. Any kind of.
It's interesting, isn't it?
So I just keep up with that. It can't go wrong, right?
Exactly, right. Now, in tax deferral, by the way, how much time do we have?
We're 9 minutes left, and we have a quick break to close out the show. So I would say that 7 to 8 minute period.
Okay.
And I have, if you want to do a few, I can do Shea Stats, depending on what you have there.
Excellent. And let's try to leave a couple minutes for that new song by Pentatonix called The Prayer,
okay.
too. Some of the harmonics, as we discussed on a break, are some of the best ever. It would point up to the argument that the violin was created as a result of trying to replicate the human voice.
Ah, yes.
But nothing currently does, and that would be a nice proof in a debate, this group singing that song, eh?
Well.
All right. So tax deferred. Contributions to these accounts, which include 401ks, besides saving to accumulate, tax planning is the next most important thing to think about. Know your tax bracket first. Where is your tax bracket and how do those work? So am I paying 10% tax on my income? Am I paying 12% on a portion of my income? The tax brackets are graduated. So the first part of your income, you're going to pay 0. The next part, 10. Next, 12 and 22 and so on. So there are only certain portions of your income that are taxed at those levels. So it's key at those max levels to know where you're at. So you can make the determination, does it make sense for me to take this as income? Or should I take it as some other form of income that might have some other tax advantages as well? So know your tax bracket first, and then know your accounts. Is this a tax-deferred account, 401k, 403b, IRA? And is that fully taxable if I do take it out? Next, do I have Roth assets, Roth accounts, that I can take out as non-taxable income? Well, I thought I was supposed to save those forever. You may, but you may not, depending on your other incomes that you receive in a given year and your need to draw emergency income. Interesting conversation yesterday with a client. He was kind of looking at me sideways. He said, well, do I really want to save some money in a Roth within my 401k? I said, well, first off, you need to make certain that the conversation didn't go quite like this, but I'm manipulating it to serve my purpose here on the radio, just so you know. I said, you know, you want to make certain that your company can do this, that the company that you work for can actually have a Roth IRA. Next, keep in mind that income that comes back out, you can't deduct what's going in as a taxable tax-deferred account, but it comes out tax-free. And, of course, his comeback was, well, what if they change the law?
Ah, yes.
And I said, of course, they may change the law, which they've already done significantly, but due to the SECURE Act and the 10-year distribution for children. But next, and we'll take that phone call in just a moment, but next, what are the disadvantages, or what if they do change that, could they also change the rules or regs regarding a regular IRA? So the point is, don't fear your don't fear your tax changes. Don't fear tax changes too much. It's the diversification strategy as to taxability that's key for you. So while they can change it, they can change any of these tax plans.
They can change tax rates or anything.
Tax rates or any of that. So it's all a moving field. Never bet the farm in any given investment strategy or tax strategy, but allocate some funds to that, even though you may be fearful of it. Because what if they don't? And you're proved right. That could be a nice thing. Okay? Let's put simply, right?
Yes.
Okay, and we have a phone call,
Let's
we not?
Let's see if we can get Joe from Williamsburg. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Ron and Dennis. Hey, my question is, this is probably a Heidi question, but at 66 and a half, you can earn as much as you want as far as Social Security goes. Is that correct?
If you are at full retirement age, FRA, yes. So 66
well,
and a half.
Well, full retirement age is 66 and a half. Is that what it is?
Well, it varies. For someone born in 1964, it's actually age 67. So it depends on your age, but most likely you're at full retirement age now if you're 66 and a half.
Okay, so one of my questions is, what do you tell your clients to, I mean, you kind of feel helpless. I have to ask my CPA, actually, what did I make last year? You know, I feel like I, I make money, but I don't know, you know, sometimes it's an unknown when you own your own business. But okay. The other question I have is, what do you tell your clients to look for in being proactive on their account?
Well, in being proactive in regards to Social Security?
Well, the whole ball of wax, I guess, you know, is there anything, like when you get your monthly statement, you know, is there something that you should look at? I mean, right now you're looking at, you know, losing money, but
yes,
that's my question is, you know, is there something that I should be looking at my accounts and you know, all those prospective things that we don't read?
Yes, you should be. I would recommend if you're unclear or uncertain on that, we offer a free one-hour consultation. There is no obligation. So either with us or some other financial advisor, whether you actually sit down, and then Social Security, it's going to depend on your benefit and as well as your spouse's benefit. There are a lot of different things to look at there, and we've got to keep moving here. My apologies for Joe for this, Joe, but we're going to have to cut this short. If you do want to call in our office, the phone number there, 231-947-3992.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.